Hello, dear listeners. Welcome to the Secret Movie Club Radio Hour, Episode 3, The Ballad of the Sin Eater, performed by the Secret Movie Club Radio Hour Company, written and directed by Daniel Ott. Stories are strange and slippery things. Some announce themselves right away as adventures, love stories, murder mysteries, and some, well, some are sly and secret as they sneak up and around and in front and behind you. Tonight's story starts in a bar. A lot of stories begin in a bar. What kind of bar is this? And where is this bar? Really, where is this bar exactly? Well, let's get right to it and find out. And how is this story going to start? Well, it's going to start like this.
In the beginning, there was nothing. And then, something. That something bred forward momentum, and that unchecked momentum produced mistakes. Those mistakes led me to here and now. But where is here and now, you might ponder to yourself as you sit and ingest this radio program? Fair question. How does this woman know I am listening to a radio program is your likely follow-up, but what answer could possibly satisfy? Maybe I'm being obscure. I find that this town does that sometimes. By that, I mean it presents obscurities. The sign welcoming you to town states, "You weren't there, but you were." Why don't we get you up to speed? I am sitting alone at a bar in the middle of a town called Saunter Valley, enjoying a quaint conversation with a woman named Genevieve. Genevieve and I are old friends, or so she tells me, and her pleasant demeanor ignites whatever part of my brain releases dopamine. That is to say, I'm fond of Genevieve. Platonically.
To put it simply, there are only two things I love: trees and shades of gray.
Genevieve is a botanist and a color expert. How those hobbies found a home together inside her mind is beyond me, but she talks about them with such passion that I can't help but be invested. She's currently speaking coarsely about a client she's less than fond of.
Did you know that the human eye can distinguish more than 500 shades of gray?
No, I can't say I did.
Each and every shade of paint or piece of furniture or accent pillow you bring into your space reads unique. And in those choices, I see exactly what lies ahead for you.
Makes sense.
Naturally, I'm dealing with someone who's choosing things that are going to get them into trouble. I recommend they reconsider over and over, maybe a darker shade or even a more neutral tone, but they're just not having it. You think turning to someone who studies the psychology and theory of color and how it orchestrates in your eventual death would inspire you to take that expert's advice? That expert being me, of course.
We stare at each other for a moment. I pick up the social cue that she wants a response from me. Means never really amount to taste. You did the best you could do, but I guess the best will not prevent them from being bested. I lean back in my chair, satisfied with my terrible wordplay.
You're not wrong there.
Not exactly the reaction I was hoping for. Genevieve takes a sip of a drink I didn't notice before.
Now, you've been dodging my question all night.
Which question?
How are you?
I roll my eyes and offer a polite laugh. Same as I ever was.
No. There's something different behind your eyes tonight.
Is that so?
You're searching for purpose.
This makes me pause. I guess I'm just trying to do some good. I feel uncomfortable and search for a place to take the conversation to, but instead find the eye of Harlow, the bartender. She moves in my direction, planting herself in front of me, in a stance that radiates the sort of confidence that makes you think insecure thoughts about yourself, which I am currently doing. She waits a moment, then speaks.
Hello, Annalise.
Hello, Harlow.
What are you chatting yourself up about over here?
There is no trace of Genevieve ever having been there. The burden of purpose, I suppose?
One of those kind of days, huh?
I think she means the kind that brings you into a bar at this time of day. This time of day being the middle of the night. Harlow's a smart cookie. She knows I won't be partaking of a liquid repast. I've brought a conversation that comes with the request.
Let's hear it.
She leans on the bar, a classic dark reclaimed wood piece that wears its history out in the open. an expensive decision in a design process, but one that seems to have paid off in building the character of this place. I'm stalling.
You're stalling.
I take a moment to sort myself out and swap into my business voice. It makes me feel self-assured. It's the mayor. I know Harlow has a certain disdain for local government.
You know I have a certain disdain for local government.
I do. I take a beat for dramatic effect. But this appears particularly rotten. She hesitates for a moment, but her intrigue gets the better of her.
Go on, then.
I smirk, a little more confident in myself. Mayor's been dealing with some out-of-sync reflections on the east side of the valley for the past few days.
I've noticed. What neighborhood?
Desert and Canyon.
That tracks. You all good?
Unfortunately, I still see me being me when I look into the mirror.
I like the you I see.
Desert and Canyon is the direct result of an oopsie from a few years back. As I mentioned before, Sonder is founded on oopsies. I continue. Anyway, after they've cleared things up and got the town back in check, two things happen. Firstly, the mayor vanishes. Immediately after that, the Lilo Forest is completely flattened, with no evidence of impact. I wait for her response.
Well, that's no good.
No good at all. Harlow stares me down. I was hoping for a more exciting reaction. So? She's playing hardball, as expected. I know she's not going to take the bait.
I'm not taking the bait.
She's in my head, literally.
You could try to ask.
A blow to my pride. I need help. I need your help. The words sound unnatural, leaving my mouth. I value you and your friendship and your work ethic and your intuition, and I could sit here and flatter you with a multitude of other compliments if that will help me win you over.
Keep them coming.
I can't tell if she's pulling my leg or not. She smirks. I realize she isn't. I'm afraid to go at it alone.
Everything good?
Sort of. There's not one thing. It's just sort of where my head is at lately.
Then I'll be there.
For the first time in a while, I feel relief.
We interrupt this radio broadcast of The Ballad of the Sin Eater for a special bulletin from the Sonder Valley Lawperson Office. This is a friendly reminder to the residents of Sonder Valley. The mysterious stranger has been spotted once again loitering through Sunday's farmer's market in Desert and Canyon, although no one can quite remember where they saw him or what he was doing outside of his now infamous friendly wave, as if to say hello, but likely inviting something far more sinister. If you have any information about this questionable person of interest, we invite you to visit us during our office hours between 11 a.m. and noon, Tuesdays and Thursdays. We ask that you do not engage with the mysterious stranger should you come into contact with him and retain control of your actions. We now return to your regularly scheduled program.
Apologies about that. To continue, Harlow and I stand in front of the Sonder Valley City Hall, a brilliant eyesore that stands as a testament to the state of the town. The mayor has been gone less than 24 hours, and already ivy creeps up the sides of the off-white walls, which have darkened an additional shade since we arrived. I wonder what Genevieve would have to say about this. Some stairs, a door, an elevator, and another door later, and we arrive in the lobby of the mayor's office. The mayor's assistant sits behind a comically oversized desk, looking nervous. I'm already frustrated with him. Taking a job at a local government level strips you of your old identity. Whoever this person was before he became the mayor's assistant is currently lost in time, at least until they move on to something new. For now, they are just the mayor's assistant. Good morning.
Is it?
I am immediately annoyed. I guess not.
Did you have an appointment?
The urge to scream obscenities nearly overcomes me. Harlow catches my sudden mood shift and steps in to mediate.
Of course not. You're still booking appointments today.
The mayor didn't really leave me any instructions with what I'm supposed to do should they vanish.
Well, that's on them. Maybe you can help us help you help your boss.
What sort of help?
I bite my cheek and focus on the pain. How Harlow is keeping her composure, I do not know.
A few questions is all.
The mayor's assistant thinks for a second on this proposition before responding.
I could do a few questions.
Beautiful. We'll start simple then. Walk me through yesterday.
The assistant removes a rather large leather-bound daily planner and places it on his desk. The smell of the leather upsets my senses.
Let's see here. The mayor stayed overnight beyond the glass for a brunch involving scones and was scheduled to return yesterday morning around noon through the mirror in the public bathroom down the hall.
He motions with his hand toward a frosted glass door with a sign reading, Oddity Adjustment Claim Check in Progress, taped to the front.
How did insurance beat us here?
They arrived before I got off the phone with them this morning.
I make a mental note that we will need to speak to the adjuster. Harlow nods, likely having read my thoughts. I also note I'm craving scones, just in case she feels the same.
The mayor didn't return when they were scheduled, did they?
Oh no, they vanished.
Yes, that is why we're here.
Harlow gives me one of those looks. She steps in close and in a low voice tells me,
Why don't you go have a chat with the oddity adjuster?
Probably a good idea.
Probably a great idea.
I make scene as I walk away. I need the assistant to know I'm leaving on my own terms. He didn't win. I walk down the hallway, looking into empty offices as I pass. Abandoned desks gather dust as plants audibly beg for water. I approach the door of the bathroom and push. Inside, I'm greeted by the pleasant smell of burnt vegetation. The bathroom is half there, some stalls and urinals remain standing. But the wall that housed the sinks and mirrors is completely gone. In its place, an opening to lilo forest, shrouded in fog. Trees spiraling and twisting outward, contorting themselves towards an unseen point. Dirt covers the floor and weeds have already begun sprouting from the tiles. Absolute silence. Before I can even process the idea of being surprised by what I'm seeing, I hear a flush of a toilet and the oddity adjuster steps out of one of the bathroom stalls.
All right, the sinks are gone.
She turns to me.
Do you have sanitizer by chance?
I can't seem to find my voice and instead dig in my bag. The adjuster puts her hand out and I squirt a dab of sanitizer in her palm. She rubs her hands together, studying the room. She's dressed in a three-piece charcoal gray suit with a tie and leather briefcase that has massive teeth marks indented on the side. She didn't wait for a question before she starts to speak.
Absolutely peculiar, this one.
She steps towards where the wall once was and places her hand on it.
Whatever this is, it's closed tight. Makes me think it might be a...
clue. She raises an eyebrow.
Oh, sure. Anything's a clue at this point, I guess. Whoever pulled this little stunt has left an invitation with your name on it.
Have you uncovered anything strange in here yet? The oddity adjuster pulls a small notebook out of her pocket. Her eyes move across the pages.
Well, to start, I cannot say where the wall has gone.
I clench my jaw.
Anything else?
The whole of it hits me as off. Where did the pipes go? The soap dispensers?
How about anything that might be useful in trying to find our mayor or figuring out why half the bathroom is now a lookout point into the forest?
Oh. No. Not yet. Not in here, but I've only just arrived.
A dead end.
Mayor's office is a different story, however.
The case continues. We move to the mayor's office, which has been recently renovated. The decision-making is questionable, at best.
Means certainly do not amount to taste. There are some upsetting choices in here, to be quite frank.
I study the room carefully. A thick layer of dust resides on every surface. My allergies sense it before I do. I hold back a sneeze. The oddity adjuster already has a handkerchief ready. I decline.
What was out of sorts in here?
Nothing.
Nothing.
No, and that's what I find odd. The room appears to have gone unused for weeks, maybe months.
That can't be right. The renovation was completed just a few days ago.
Precisely.
I rack my brain, hungry for anything that will bring clarity. A small stack of books on the desk. Mayoral Duties, The Secret World of Local Government, The People's History of Saunder Valley, and Brilliant, Beautiful Benefaction. A map of Saunder Valley hangs triumphantly behind the mayor's desk, slightly off-centered and not at all straight, the distorted image of the area continually shifting, except for one piece of the map. Moving closer, I find a single thumbtack pushed partway into the section of the lilo forest. It seems too easy. Without saying a word, I move swiftly back into the bathroom. Gumwood trees.
How can you tell?
I jump a bit, not having heard the adjuster enter the room behind me.
A friend of mine is a big fan of trees.
I assume gumwood should mean something to me, and I will be the first to apologize for not knowing.
They only exist in two parts of the known world.
And one of those parts is at the southern end of Lilo Forest. I was just there a few days ago, actually.
I jump again. I'm starting to feel a little undone. Genevieve smiles at me and takes a step towards the wall, examining the trees. The oddity adjuster stares at me.
Again, my sincere apologies, but I'm a little lost.
My brain is spinning. What do you have about the forest being flattened?
The oddity claim is strictly for the bathroom, but the Sonder Inquirer has some theories.
And what does the Sonder Inquirer think?
An explosion in the air.
Foul play.
Usually. You should really read their story. Absolutely fascinating.
Why don't you give me a synopsis?
Well, there was a flash of grayish light, a symphony of unpleasant sound, and a shockwave that flattened everything below, as well as knocked any unfortunate folks in the area straight off their feet. It doesn't really do it justice, though. Some really fine writing in that. You should pick up a copy.
Shut out her voice as I study the trees in the wall. Did you notice all of these trees are bending back in the same direction?
How do you mean?
They're all pointing towards something in the fog.
Well, that's a bit spooky.
It is. The adjuster scribbles in her notebook. I start for the door.
Ma'am?
I stop, but dramatically, don't turn back.
What is it that you think you're going to find out there?
Well, the mayor, for starters.
But what is it that you are looking for?
I exhale loudly and exit the bathroom without answering. Everyone wants into my psyche today. Harlow peeks from the reception area into the hall, hearing my footsteps. I hear the mayor's assistant babbling on.
What's he babbling on about?
He's become anxious about whether or not to order the mayor's lunch, in case they're found before them.
The assistant yells from around the corner, out of sight.
It's a fair concern. They're gonna be mad either which way.
I pause in the hallway to avoid having to look at him.
What's happening over there?
She points down the hall.
Bathroom's a mess. I'll explain on the way.
Where are we going?
Into the forest.
Brilliant.
I turn towards the exit, but pause. Genevieve, how do we go about finding the Lilo Forest? Genevieve leans against the wall next to the door.
You can't find it. Not really.
My stomach sinks.
That's not helpful.
I think things will work themselves out for you, though.
She holds the door open for us. I realize immediately the commercial break is imminent.
This is Little Trouble Hat Company's Sonder Valley correspondent Glenn Gilbert back once again to tell you about our new afternoon picnic paper braid solid crown sun hat. With a large brim that shields the sun from your eyes and face and striking features such as a custom ribbon and a variety of white, black, and gray shades to fit your every mood and style. Plus, the afternoon picnic is fully crushable and packable, making it a traveler's delight. Throw it in your bag and forget you own it, then buy another one. One size fits a select few. Pick it up at your favorite sun hat shop today. This is Glenn Gilbert for Little Trouble Hat Company signing off.
Harlow and I now stand at the exit of a path in Lilo Forest. A clearing lies ahead. I can't quite remember how we arrived, but we are here. The sight is overwhelming. Fog stretches from the floor of the forest to the sky. It's impossible to tell where the fog ends and the smoldering ruins of what once was begins. It's also eerily silent. I debate humming a tune to fill the air with sound.
Please don't.
I decide against it. Feels unprofessional. Mysterious stranger waves from the other side of the clearing. I wave back, but he's already gone. Where he stood appears to be the way forward. I'm nervous. I can't pretend otherwise. Harlow takes my hand in hers. The relief of not being here alone helps me take a step. As we make our way forward into the clearing, we notice them. Just the one at first. Then lots of them. Sin eaters. I say it out loud as if it makes it any better. Those looking for answers when the darkness is encroaching turn to the sin eaters. They are said to consume your wrongs. The grass at their feet shifts in tones as they approach. Harlow and I stop. They stop. We take a step forward. They take a step forward. It's like an awkward musical number with painfully dull choreography. But we continue, and we meet in the middle of the clearing. They are all of them, dressed in matching white rompers with slight variations of floral patterns embroidered on them. The Sin Eater leading the group speaks.
Hello, ladies.
Her voice is soft and soothing, like being read a book as you're going to sleep. Don't you get cold in those? She smiles at me.
We don't exclusively wear these.
It would fit the whole cult dynamic you've got going on.
Organization.
Pardon?
We are not a cult.
Your practices suggest otherwise.
You're more than welcome to look us up. We're a tax-exempt organization.
I don't care how you refer to yourself.
I'm personally fond of the term community. That's what we aspire to foster.
There's a lot of stories about you.
Any of them exciting?
They're pretty spooky, actually.
Folk tales meant to scare children. And occasionally adults.
She points at me and smiles again. I can feel the goosebumps on my arms rise. Harlow squeezes my hand tightly.
Regardless, whatever it is that we used to represent has gone the way of dinosaurs.
Is that so?
Gone are the glad hands.
Help us understand, then.
Which part?
Where's the mayor? I ready myself for an extravagant excuse.
They're resting inside the charnel tree.
Not what I was expecting. No.
What's that now?
The charnel tree is another myth.
Oh no, it's quite real. Today is proving to be a real learning experience for you.
What kind of myth are we talking about here?
I realize I must be the voice of exposition. It's said to house the spirits of those who depart Sonder Valley. The Sin Eater cuts me off.
Partially correct. It's more of a totem. It's also a lovely place for a quick nap. People are often found resting there, especially after an offering.
A heavy sigh escapes my mouth. What does the mayor have to do with any of this?
They are looking for atonement.
For what?
Some personal things. And something involving a botched remodel.
Where is the charnel tree?
Every tree here points toward it.
Of course they do.
Why don't I just show you?
Harlow and I exchange a glance. This isn't what I expected, I think. Harlow nods in agreement. I turn back to face the Sin Eater, but instead find myself staring directly at a massive tree, seemingly extending in all directions infinitely, perhaps the largest tree I have ever encountered, though I can't pretend I'm any authority on large trees. I wish for a moment that Genevieve could be here to see this.
It's an impressive tree.
I turn to find Genevieve, but I'm alone. A low branch extends out from the base of the tree, curved on the sides and hollowed in the center like a water slide. And in it, the mayor, napping peacefully. Stepping forward, I place my hand on their face. There is warmth and there is light. They bat my hand away and turn over, still asleep.
You seem upset.
The Sin Eater stands next to me.
You were expecting something sinister?
My throat tightens up. I can't form a response.
Because we were an uncertainty to you.
I'm just trying to make sense of this.
I can make sense of it for you. The mayor came to us. They were all out of sorts following the Reflections incident and made a frankly dangerous design decision when remodeling their office.
And the forest?
Atonement doesn't free us from repercussions.
So the mayor caused all this?
Yes, but they came here to channel it. The forest shares our faults and will recenter itself over time. We, of course, will do our part to aid it in that.
Still sounds very cult-like.
The more I explain without context, the more I realize that, but I can assure you that isn't the aim.
I watch the mayor sleeping peacefully.
What is it that you're looking for, Annalise?
I take a moment to reflect on this. A chance to do good, maybe? I thought I could bust this thing wide open and save the town.
I'd say you've done that, no?
Not in the way I expected.
Well, I can't help you there, unfortunately. But you keep looking for you. There may not have been any proper action in the forest today, but Sonder breeds trouble. And it will find you.
The mayor continues to nap, seemingly unperturbed by the soul-searching conversation happening over them. Back at the bar, Harlow, Genevieve, and I are back in our usual position. Harlow slams a beer down in front of me that's the size of my head. She lifts up one of her own. Genevieve does the same. Thank you for your help today. The glasses clank together and beer spills every which way.
Anytime.
Genevieve winks at me from behind her glass and smiles. Harlow takes a drink, and I take a sip. I let my mind wander for a moment, back to the day and the circumstances that led us to that forest. Things still feel skewed to me. The mayor was still sleeping when I dropped them off at City Hall. The mayor's assistant had decided to order them lunch and put it away for later so they'll have something to eat when they wake up. They'll also have questions to answer. I think back to the Sin Eater's last words to me.
Sonder breeds trouble,
and it will find you. As I sit here enjoying the company of the people I'm surrounded by, the people that I love, I feel confident. When the trouble arrives, well, we'll figure it out.
Ah, the story ended in the bar as well. Or did it really end? Or did we arrive at the beginning? Or somewhere else that hides in the shadows of stories? Well, dear listener, we leave it to you. Thank you for spending a bit of time with us to twist and turn in the strange and beautiful winds of this narrative. You just heard The Ballad of the Sin Eater, starring
Elizabeth Bain as Harlow,
Connor Lloyd Cruz as Glenn Gilbert,
Beverly Jean as the Oddity Adjuster,
Elise Metcalf as Annalise,
Daniel Ott as Sonder Valley Law Person Office Spokesman,
Jaron Padre as Genevieve,
Ryan Pig as the Mayor's Assistant,
May Ruling as the Sin Eater.
This episode was written and directed by Daniel Ott, produced and edited by Connor Lloyd Cruz, sound design and re-recording mixing by Jamie Hart, original music by Andrew Kaiser, and I'm Craig Hamill, the founder programmer of Secret Movie Club. Join us in late October for next Secret Movie Club Radio Hour, an anthology of truly terrifying and troublesome tricky twisty tales. Until then, you can find out all about everything we do, from movie screenings to podcasts, from radio hours to cinema writing, at secretmovieclub.com. Until then, you just might want to ask yourself, am I the writer of this story or just a character in it? Or both? Or neither? Well, we'll leave it up to you. Good night.